I'm Clay Pigeon. Welcome to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. It's a weekly digest of some of the segments and moments that make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show on WFMU. Of course, you can listen live to Wake and Bake Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on WFMU.org. Join me live every morning for the full show. It includes great music, chair throwing, pixie dust, and all-around good vibes.
Oh my God, the man is a maniac.
You can also hear the full show on streaming archives at WFMU.org/playlists/WA. Our Wake and Bake animal of the week is the sponge. Sponges are multicellular organisms with porous bodies that allow water to circulate through them. Sponges don't have nervous, digestive, or circulatory systems. They have to keep that water moving to obtain food, oxygen, and to go to the bathroom. Sponges can regenerate parts when they're broken off.
Look.
Yeah.
Sponges have been around forever, since the Cambrian explosion of life. 750 million years ago. People have used sponges for thousands of years, for padding and as cleaning tools. By the 1950s, though, we overfished sponges so heavily that the industry almost collapsed. These days, most sponges are synthetic.
This is what I normally have on hand. This dirty old nasty one to rinse off some gunk from my dishes and all that sort of thing. And that one needs to be thrown out because it's gross. Gross.
Most sponges live for just a few years, but some deep water sponges can live to be 200 or more.
This monk is not dead, but in a very deep meditation. Forensic examinations are continuing on the amazing remains, which are believed to be around 200 years old.
The Caribbean fire sponge causes a nasty rash in humans who touch them. Symbiosis. Australian bottlenose dolphins have been known to use sponges as a tool to protect them when they forage for food on the rough sea bottom. Today, synthetic sponges are used for household cleaning, but also as breast implants and for contraception.
And the bottom line is that it works for me.
The Today Sponge, today's choice in birth control.
It works for me. It works for me.
Sponges have great medicinal value for controlling viruses, bacteria, fungi, and tumors. We love sponges at Wake and Bake. We hope you do too. We do love sponges. I used to live down around Tarpon Springs. They still have sponge divers down there with the cool old brass helmets. But it's probably good that they have the synthetic ones now. Leave the sponges be down there. Animals, we don't think of them as animals. Love a sponge today. What's on your mind? What's interesting you this
morning? Black holes. You know, it's interesting. I read a story the other day that they say that in 2018, we will for the first time visually witness a black hole.
We've never done it?
We've never seen it. We have like information data and gravitational information.
I think the visions in our mind from movies of spaceships getting sucked into these black holes and going to plaid and all that.
That's it.
Right.
So there's this thing called event horizon, and event horizon is actually it's really the term which means the place where everything disappears into a black hole, where gravity, light, nothing can come out at that point. It's so massive, it's so dense, there's so much gravity that everything's getting pulled into it. So scientists on Earth have named an array of telescopes, which is basically about 15 or 20 telescopes arranged around the planet.
Right.
They've called it the Event Horizon Telescopes. And what they've done is they've basically taken this gigantic distance of telescopes and made a telescope that's about as big as the Earth. That's basically what happens by taking every single radio telescope on the corners of the globe and using it and combining those forces and using it as one detector. So what they're doing is they're actually aiming that toward the center of the galaxy, toward Sagittarius A, which they believe is the largest black hole out there. And we're talking about something that's 4 million times the mass of our sun.
And how far away is it, George?
It's about 26,000 light years away.
Right.
So it's like before history. The light that's coming to us, or the gravitational waves that are coming to us from Sagittarius A, are before our history, 26,000 years. So what they're doing is they're saying now they're going to be able to composite all these images from around the globe and to actually see what it looks like and to see what's happening on the edge of that black hole for the first time. They'll be able to determine whether it's oval shaped or whether it's cylindrical or spherically shaped and a lot of other information. But we will be able to have a detectable image from a black hole, they say, by this year, by the time this information is composited.
I have all these layman's perceptions of black holes, like everything would get crushed.
Yes.
It's
true.
Compression.
It's correct. Yeah.
Now, are there mauve holes? Are there turquoise holes? White holes? What's the opposite, George, of a black hole?
It's the sun. Is the sun. Is
no
a,
kidding.
Yeah, it's a star.
Oh, because it's a... I see what
there's
you're saying.
Not as, there's not as when the
oh,
what happens
man.
Is when the gravity gets so fierce and it's so massive, the gravity it pulls everything to the center so much that even light can't pull away from it. Nothing can pull away from it. So it's black. It's a sun that's black because the light won't come away from
Are
it.
Are we going to Mars?
Are we going? Yeah, we're going to go to Mars. I think it's going to be a lot more difficult than we thought it is. People are going to want
you
to come
were
home.
Talking about that, George.
Yeah.
How space is hard on the body.
Yeah.
We can't Gabby Gifford's husband's brother is up there now for what almost a
long
year.
Long time.
It's hard on him. They're going to find out.
You know what I think? I think when we get a message from outer space and we finally translate it, they're going to say, "Stay home." Space is dark.
You've been telling me
it's cold.
The message of space is stay home.
Take care of
your
home.
Earth.
Earth is...
Have we just given up on it?
We've got to love Earth. You've got to love Earth. Because once you get out there, it's dark, it's cold, it's far, it's dusty, it's not fun.
Does it make you mad the way we treat it?
Yeah, it
does. Does it make you want to slam a door?
It does. It makes me mad.
Say your name as you leave in honor of Earth, George. Thank you, man. Black hole.
George!
You know, WFMU has a strong constituency of curmudgeonly listeners, but it struck me that I don't really know where that word comes from. Well, it turns out the best scholars and etymologists don't either. The word seems to have shown up around 1570. Samuel Johnson's dictionary stated that it comes from the French term cœur méchant, meaning evil heart. Another theory is that it comes from the Gaelic word for a disagreeable person, combined with the word cur, which refers to a mutt, coming from the Norse word curra, which means to growl. So is a curmudgeon someone who is so disagreeable that we liken them to a dog? With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. Is man's best friend really that disagreeable? We might call someone a dirty dog, or say they're crooked as a dog's hind leg.
Flex and extend it, see if that's okay.
We might say someone is sick as a dog, or that they're in the dog's house.
Oh, you are so much crack, you little twerp!
And not to beat a dead dog into the ground, but if a book is worn, it's dog-eared. And if a sexually aggressive man gets together with an ugly woman, We've got two dogs on our hands.
Okay, Danny, you get the stick, you get your apple.
Oh, yeah, you're beautiful.
If we look to the Bible, we can find, for example, Hazael's asking Jesus, "How could your servant, a mere dog, accomplish such a feat?"
An Irish setter has never won.
That's right.
Best in show.
Before canines were our precious puppies, they were work animals. Dog tired from leading a dog's life. And that would make a curmudgeon out of the best of us. Back to you, Clay.
Boys, let's swing that spotlight around and shine it brightly on one very special town in our listing area. Our civic showcase today focuses on Flemington, New Jersey. Way down in the Amwell Valley.
Ho, ho, ho.
In the lowest part of the Newark Basin.
Way down.
Sits Flemington, 55 miles east of Jersey City.
Yeah.
Population, 4,581, and it's growing. My mind wants to call the first Algonquin Native Americans in the Flemington area Lenape.
No.
However, some locals tell me it's pronounced Lenape.
Yes.
An online pronunciation website called them Lenape.
Lenape. Lenape.
Now, the Lenape ceded the land to William Penn in the early 1700s, and a peace pipe was passed around. For the curious, the town was named for early settler William Fleming, a Dutchman.
Just plain Dutchman was his name.
Flemington's fertile fields bore good crops, but in time, dairy grew, well, more important. The old Flemington courthouse succumbed to fire in 1826, and nearby Lambertville took advantage and tried to hijack county seat status from poor Flemington.
Bastards.
It was February 13, 1935, when a jury in Flemington found Bruno Hauptmann guilty of the kidnapping and murder of Charles Lindbergh's baby boy.
Thousands stormed the venerable court in Flemington, New Jersey, to witness one of the most sensational trials of modern times.
Famous people from Flemington include the late Danny Federici, legendary organist and keyboard player for Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band.
We had a little scene where we all ended up hanging out in Asbury Park called the Upstage Club. Danny goes back all the way there with me and Bruce and Gary Talent also.
Also from Flemington, Catherine Minner. She was a character actress best known as the little old lady from Pasadena in old Dodge Motors television commercials.
This car was formerly owned by an oyster salesman who only drove it in months with an R in them.
I certainly hope so. I came all the way from Pasadena to buy this car. Bye, honey.
Goodbye.
What a great town, Flemington, New Jersey. We're so proud to be your radio station, Flemington. We hope you're listening. Thoughts and opinions about the people and topics that matter to us most. It's Quick Takes with Fabio. Fabio, what's on your mind this week?
Movies were
you know, a medium that was designed to be seen on a large screen, usually in a big theater, in the dark, with no distractions.
We must insist on absolute quiet.
With a bunch of other people looking at the same screen at the same time, hearing the same things and seeing the same things.
Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder.
And being immersed in this experience.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
But over time, movies came to be something that, you know, are just consumed like anything else. So it's no longer really an experience, unless you make it that way, going to a theater.
Ah, hello there. Give the demonstration of my new invention, the Goodies Machine. Special for patrons of this drive-in, the machine turns out delumptious hot doggies one after the other.
And I understand not everyone has access to movie theaters in their area, and it's hard to see movies sometimes. But because of the internet and streaming video and all that, you can see all kinds of movies at home on TV.
Do you want a whole world of entertainment right at your fingertips all day, every day? Yeah. Then turn on the world-class excitement of cable TV.
And TVs have gotten much bigger and better quality imaging.
Zenith presents Space Screen 45, more than three times the area of a 25-inch screen, yet the picture is sharper than ever before in home projection TV.
So, yeah. But movies, watching movies on a cell phone or even an iPad is just really a disservice all around. I mean, it really is one of the lamest things I've seen in a while, you know.
David Lynch.
Now, if you're playing the movie on a telephone, you will never in a trillion years experience the film.
I mean, you wouldn't take a photo of a Michelangelo or a Da Vinci or any art and show it to somebody on your cell phone and say, oh, look at this Da Vinci. No, it's not the same experience. And it's the same thing with movies. But people seem to think that's okay. But you're missing out. You're missing out on the detail and the vibrancy of the image and all of the subtleties that come with it as an immersive experience. And it's terrible. People watch movies on their cell phones in the subway. I mean, it's just absurd. Sorry, but it is.
I love you, Fabio. You know, Fabio really does love movies. I think I might watch one on a cell phone just because it's kind of fun, you know, maybe laying in bed with Kirsten somewhere, that little tiny screen, just kind of fun. Now here's station manager Ken with your Hump Day Hazmat Report.
Thank you, Clay Pigeon. Woodlawn, Maryland. Baltimore County Police have evacuated their precinct after three officers fell ill due to fentanyl exposure. Montgomery, New Jersey, a tractor trailer has collided with a pole, spilling toxic tractor entrails over five lanes. Topeka, Kansas, authorities investigated a suspicious package which contained an unusual substance at the federal building. New Haven, Connecticut, hazmat crews responded to an ammonia leak at a New Haven bakery, which shall remain unnamed due to the delicious but now toxic croissants and biscuits representing a dangerous temptation to the local population. Petaluma Municipal Airport, fire crews are dousing a burning aeroplane in Hangar 8 at Petaluma Airport, trying to keep the toxic tractor trailer juice away from the runways. Frederick, Maryland, a hazmat team was called to the local police department center to ventilate pepper spray from the lobby. San Antonio, Texas, a semi truck rolled over, spilling 74,000 pounds of vegetables on Interstate 35. Brussels sprouts, collard greens, clog the engine lanes.
Hold it, station manager Ken. We're out of time. Tractor entrails, unusual substances, toxic croissants. Let's go to the audience now and see if we need a bonus hazmat disaster today. What do you think, audience? They say yes, station manager Ken.
Across the globe to Grick, Malaysia, 23 students at the Mara Junior Science College in Grick suffered food poisoning after consuming what is believed to have been stale spaghetti on January 7th.
Stale spaghetti. It is such a dangerous world out there. Now let's check in with our friend Gabe Cohen and Introspective Infrastructure on Waken Bay.
45 to 55 mile an hour gusts are possible here in New York City as the afternoon goes on, and 1 to 2 inch per hour snow rates. It's probably going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
In the wake of cold temperatures and snow bombarding the city, some relief can be found in the suspension of alternate side parking through tomorrow, Wednesday the 10th.
City streets were too clogged with snow to enforce alternate side parking rules. That ended today.
While many New Yorkers bemoan the return of the bi-weekly annoyance, older members of the bustling metropolis may remember the winter of 1978, which brought with it a record-holding 62-day suspension of street parking rules.
It snowed and snowed and snowed. It was a lot of snow.
People just thought we were just going to get a little bit of snow and that was going to be it. So I don't think the public was prepared for it at all.
The final dissipation of snow revealed streets littered with slimy layers of debris and ice pungent with the aroma of rotting garbage. The problem was so bad that it crippled street cleaners. Federal funds were required to hire temporary workers who cleaned the city's roadways with ordinary dustpans and brooms. For WFMU, this is Gabriel Cohen.
I need you to just talk to him for a minute.
We're going to talk about the strangest stone ever found on planet Earth.
Okay, George.
Yeah. It's called the Hypatia Stone or Hypatia Pebble, and they discovered it in Egypt in 1996. And scientists down at the University of Johannesburg are studying this thing, and they're determining that it's unlike anything that's ever been found on the planet.
It's a stone.
It's a stone, and it's an intergalactic stone, they're saying. It's another one. It's very similar, they're saying, to that cigar-shaped...
It came from space.
It came from way out in space, beyond the solar system.
Is it radioactive? Have they held one of those Geiger counters up to it?
It's not radioactive, but it's got a micro-mineral compound that is unlike anything that's ever been found. It has very little silica, almost no silica at all, which is basically what we have on our planet.
Is that sand?
Silica? Sand, basically sand, exactly.
Right.
And it has
elements we don't recognize?
It has a compound. It has the element, or it's composed of elements that is unlike any other thing that we've ever found.
Right.
So it's unusual. And they're saying that it was formed in deep cold, something that's so cold, like cold below liquid nitrogen. So it had to be way out there in space. Like,
when did they find this?
They found it about 20 years ago in Egypt, and they've been studying it for years. And now that they're getting deep into it, they're starting to figure that this thing could be like could be like from way out there and
is
way
it hard?
Before.
Is it like impenetrable?
It's a hard, hard rock surface.
It makes tungsten seem like silly putty. Mm.
It's a tough rock to break. It's
right.
A
tough have rock they tried to weaponize it? Is the That's military the next all thing. Over this thing?
That's the next thing. Once they find it where it came from, they're going to go get more, and they're going to put all our warheads, cover it with it. So who knows? But anyway, it's interesting because what it's doing, it's showing that there's stuff coming from out beyond the solar system, just like that Oumuamua cigar-shaped asteroid that we've all been so interested in.
You can't get that out of your head, that cigar-shaped.
That's a spaceship out there watching us.
Listen to you. You think it is, don't you?
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it's very strange.
What's that thing on the History Channel with the alien? It's just on. It's on all the time.
Yeah.
The alien...
alien abductions, talking about the alien...
It's not abduction. It's just theories about extraterrestrials. And she's all over that.
Yeah.
You believe.
If they sent a probe, that's what it would
listen,
be like.
George, I think I believe, too.
Listen. Yeah. I'm not going to say no, but if they did send a probe from somewhere else, it would look like
what
a big
are the
cigar.
Odds, what are the odds, though, that if they come, they want to blow the hell out of us just immediately?
We
better
we're
have
toast.
Weapons on them,
George. We're toast.
We better weaponize that hard rock.
Yeah, we're breakfast. We're breakfast.
I love you, man.
Go, man.
Slam it, George. Do it for me. Do it for me. Oh, yeah. New York City took two huge steps to combat climate change. On Wednesday, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced a lawsuit against five major oil companies and vowed to push the city's pension funds to divest about $5 billion from the fossil fuel industry. Activists like Kara Vondrich of Divest Invest have been working toward this for years. And with a little luck, I think we have Clara on the line. Clara, are you with me?
I'm with you, Clay.
Oh, fantastic. How you doing, Clara?
I'm doing fantastic. I have no complaints.
Is it raining where you are?
It is. It's a little drizzly, but 60 degrees. This climate change thing is no joke.
Right.
Below 20 one day, 60 the next.
Well, tell me, Clara, why is... I just did a little introduction to tell folks what you're going to talk about. Why is it such big news for us?
Listen, Clay, almost exactly 4 years ago, volunteers from 350 NYC delivered 11,000 petitions to New York State pension boss Tom DiNapoli, calling him to ditch the fossil fuel stocks that were burning the planet, as well as New Yorkers' hard-won retirement benefits. Since then, DiNapoli has kept his head in the sand, refusing to divest, even after Governor Cuomo called on the state pension, which is the third biggest in the nation, to divest last month. But on Wednesday, the game changed. Mayor de Blasio stepped into that vacuum left by DiNapoli and announced that the financial heartbeat of the world would divest its five city pension funds worth collectively over $191 billion from coal, oil, and gas.
It sounds like great news. Can you give us a little insight? What exactly is Divest Invest, and what kind of work do you do specifically, Clara?
So our purpose is to accelerate the clean energy transition, and that can only happen if we go to the belly of the beast, which is the money.
Right.
We have to transition capital from brown to green choices, starving the fossil fuel industry and the fuels of the past from their resources and funneling that money instead into the energies of the future that are going to create a safe and fair energy economy for all of us.
Right.
And listen, Clay, the importance of this move just can't be overstated. The financial heartbeat of the world just declared war on the fossil fuel industry.
Right, right.
Suddenly, the impossible becomes possible. And I'll never forget how financial folks used to laugh at us back in the day, calling divestment naive at best and a derogation of fiduciary duty at worst. But what students in philanthropy started back in 2010, 2011 on a few college campuses has now morphed into a global phenomenon.
Right.
New York's historic move, the assets of divesting institutions, now exceeds $6 trillion.
So are we doing kind of an end run around Washington? Because from
Hell
everything,
yeah.
It seems like we're the country's dragging its feet. We're behind the rest of the world with this whole thing.
We're we're the laughing stock. Listen, I've got a cousin in Switzerland, and he says that America is the laughing stock of the modern world.
Now, let me ask you this, Clara, because we hear about green energy, and then they tell us it's not quite ready yet. Be honest, Clara, do we still need some fossil fuels? Is green ready to go or not quite? What's the truth? What's the equation?
First of all, Clay, this isn't about green anymore. This is about humanity
right.
and preserving our chance to live on this planet, our only home. You know, Elon's cool. He's trying to send us to Mars, but why would we give up on this perfect place, which has been adapted over the millennia to basically provide a perfect home for us? Green energy, clean energy, whatever you want to call it, is here now. Solar and wind prices have declined by 60 to 90% over the past 5 years, making them cost competitive with fossil fuels, even the cheapest fossil fuel among them, which is coal.
Right.
So the only reason that we don't have the possibility of moving forward at, you know, all deliberate speed is because our political system stands in the way. It's not a question of science, not a question of technology. It's a question of political will. And Donald Trump, you know, God bless him, because I know he's got some issues, but he is really standing in the way. But what's great about this situation and about divest in particular is that it doesn't depend on policy. It doesn't depend on politics. It's something that every American, every global citizen can take. You can divest your own assets, or you can work on an institution in your orbit, whether it's a church, a city, you know, your own university or school.
Right.
You can call on those trustees to get the hell out of fossil fuels while
Clara,
the getting is good.
Clara, I hear your passion, and I really appreciate it. It's very exciting, and I know a lot of our listeners are right there on board with you. Tell them how they can get involved real quickly.
Absolutely. I just wanted to give a special shout-out to the students who really started this campaign. They lit a match that sparked this revolution back in 2010, 2011, and to the Wallace Global Fund, Ellen Dorsey over there, who helped fund some of these early movements. But now the best way to get involved for folks in America and actually around the globe is to log on to gofossilfree.org, which is a fantastic resource created by the climate activism group 350.org, led by Bill McKibben and May Bowie. And there you can find a map of the globe where you can click on your region, and they'll hook you up with local affiliates of 350 that are working on just these issues.
Clara, thanks a lot for calling in today. I do have to get back to it here, but I appreciate your taking the time to call us and all the hard work and energy you're putting into this worthy cause.
Absolutely, Clay. It's a beautiful day, and 2018 is going to be a killer year for climate change.
That's what I want to hear. I like the year of optimism. Thanks a lot. I hope we talk to you again, Clara.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take care.
The Free Music Archive pick of the week this week is called Butane Sundown by Bureaucrat and the Conspirators, a side project of the Rope River Blues Band from Baltimore. This song, pulled from the album 10 Years on the Weird Wide, is a psych-folk slow jam overlaid with impressionistic and dystopian poetry with a spectacular freakout where an expletive should be.
There are trips where you are so much under the influence you can't visually see with your eyes anymore.
It's available for free streaming and download at freemusicarchive.org. So let's get to it. Without further ado, here's Butane Sundown by Bureaucrat and the Conspirators. Enjoy.
Without speaking, you know what I feel. In the air and dancing. Oases forming and unforming. Umbrellas in the rain. Beginning operas in the wind. Come off the interstate, sunset grated on the windows of grand hotels. Hyundais racing through the streets of hit and run. Everyone exhausted by their own interpretation of a language makes no sense. Even with his fantastic suntan, One day you'll roam the twilight construction, turning into chalk, brain sharp as cracked crystal, panic in your roller coaster eyes, discovered by the wrong people and speechless. Cut from your no answers good for me, puppy mill of corporate clusters. As the night goes, gorgeous shades of teal, trademarked in Bora Bora by outlaw bastard patriot friends.
This is your favorite cheesemonger, Wendy Del Formaggio, with your weekly cheese report. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the United States, most of us are afraid of cheese.
A fear of cheese would definitely be considered irrational. A fear of cheese.
If it's been out of refrigeration for more than 10 minutes, many people panic and want to throw it in the trash. That's just ridiculous. Cheese was developed to preserve milk and its nutritional value back when nobody had refrigerators and all dairy animals were only milked seasonally. Some fresh cheeses, like cream cheese and fresh mozzarella, should go in the fridge. But all other cheeses can sit out on the counter.
Aww.
Really? Just take them out of the plastic wrap and put them in a sealed container away from direct sunlight or a heat source. They'll taste better that way, too. Back to you, Clay.
Thanks, Wendy.
I had pizza at my dad's softball game, and I threw it up. It was so gross. So much cheese.
I love cheese. How about you guys? You know, Wendy has her own radio program called Choose Your Own Adventure every Wednesday, 3 to 5, on Black Sheep Radio, WOOL-FM, 91.5 FM, in the Bellows Falls area of Vermont. Do today in history. We've still got a few minutes here. In 1967, Dr. James Bedford becomes the first person to be cryonically preserved with intent of future resuscitation. Did you ever look up Alcor Industries online? Walt Disney's head is frozen. Can you imagine his head? Right now, as we live and breathe, Walt Disney's head frozen. Frozen! Denny McLean, too. 1979 Sixth Annual American Music Awards. You know who the big winners were? Barry Manilow and Linda Ronstadt. I actually love both of them. Dynasty with Joan Collins premiered on ABC on this day in 1981, January 12th. Civil rights activist Al Sharpton was stabbed in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn in 1990 on this date. 19 European nations agree to forbid human cloning in 1998. George is nodding. Don't clone people, George. Anyway, I want to clone you in case you're unavailable. And in 1971, All in the Family, the first toilet flush on national TV. We need a toilet flush right now, I think. Raisin Bran.
Can you see him in the toilet? And the seat goes, get off me! The water don't even flush. It just goes, oh, oh, oh. So much suction from his tuchus. How's the water going to go down?
Birthdays include Ray Price, the country singer. He died in 2013. Born this day in 1926. Ruth Brown's birthday today. Glenn Yarborough. Remember him? Baby, the rain must fall. There's Johnny Allen. Christian Amanpour's birthday today. Same day. We're the same age. I'm a little younger. Rob Zombie, happy birthday, 1965. He was born. Heather Mills, isn't that Paul McCartney's wife? Heather Mills, it's her birthday today. Much younger than Paul, I'll guarantee told you. Zach De La Rocca. Yeah. Born in 1970. Rage Against the Machine. Oh, the doggy, the little doggy. Will she bark, Johnny? Can you make her bark? There's little Maxine. And in 1876, Jack London, White Fang. Remember that one, Jack London, White Fang, all those man-oriented books? George, grab this paper here. Come in, George. I want you to wad with me. I want you to take out all your frustration.
Okay.
It's a dual wad. Nothing went right, did it, George?
No,
but we had a good time. George, here we go. One, two, three. Wad. You got to go. Get it.
No,
now unwad. Okay. Unwad. Double down. Wad.
The crawdads in the creek. What are they possibly thinking? What is it that they are feeling? The crawdads feel nothing. They are too rudimentary to truly understand the gravity
or their own brevity.
They feel no
funniness.
They click their pincers to warn each other. Look out for the brown boots. For they will crush you beneath the mud, and they will crack your exoskeleton, and then they'll put you in a can after they turn you into gelatin. Isn't it handsome, the owl wing in my hat? What do you think of that, my friends? 'Cause I got an owl wing in my hat. It's handsome, don't you think? Yes, I've got an owl wing in my hat. And I'm gonna show it off. Have some beef stroganoff.
You've been listening to the Wake and Bake Morning Show podcast. Did you enjoy it?
Yes.
Good. It's a weekly digest of the special features and moments which make up the Wake and Bake Morning Show.
Woo!
After all, you wouldn't want to miss special moments like this.
Ah, you're in a good mood today, aren't you?
Oh!
The Wake and Bake Morning Show. Set your alarm and join us each Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. on WFMU.org. A little too early for you? Catch the archive show, which you can find easily on WFMU's homepage each day. I'm Clay Pigeon. They call me the Pigeon. Join me each morning for the full show, either on the radio or online at WFMU.org. And keep glistening.